Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you look at all the craziness that's going on, and look, Florida is in the heart of insanity, and it's going to be... look, my wife and I have taken the kids down to Florida for Christmas for, you know, multiple years. Not the last two, of course, but for, you know, several years before that, that was our Christmas present. We always went down, spent 2 weeks on the beach, a good family event. I don't know when we're going back with as crazy as things are and really how unserious the leadership there is. So the only way to change that is to change the leadership. The only way to change the culture is to get the bums out who are causing this mess, which is why I think it's important to get local people to run for office and take on those entrenched interests. And here to share some thoughts on why she's decided to run in Florida's 19th congressional district. I've asked Cindy Beignet to come back and talk with us. She is a university professor and, look, someone who's willing to step forward and say things are wrong and actually know how to fix them. Cindy, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Rick.
So you literally teach American government.
I do. I teach American government, helping to have the next generation of youth be informed on how our government works and to get excited to get involved.
Yeah, I look at, with what's going on in Afghanistan right now, I look at this special report that just came out talking about what lessons did we learn from Afghanistan by this special counsel guy. And one of the things that they said is the mission was always doomed from the beginning because, well, short-term thinking, hubris, and bad intelligence. Basically, us, our arrogance, and our stupidity caused this.
Yeah, so we know that Afghanistan was going to be a problem. It was a knee-jerk reaction in this formulated war against terror under Dick Cheney's, you know, doctrine to just do a bait and switch, essentially, from the Cold War to the war on terror. And it met those needs at the time, but there was urging from a lot of people from the very beginning to not let it go on forever, to have an exit strategy, to not let this become the next Vietnam. And here we are evacuating just like we did in Saigon.
No, and that's the thing that's most frustrating about this. But again, I keep coming back to it's us. We're not the educated populace. We like to pump up our chest and think we are, because most people don't even remember that it was Bush that got us into this mess.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and somebody like me who's got 2 degrees in international relations and has worked in foreign policy a lot, it pains me that Americans don't pay attention to foreign policy. I know they don't. They care about the veterans and the soldiers coming back and the experience they had, but they really didn't care about why we were there in the first place. And the unfortunate thing was, is it started as a war on terror and then moved into this neoconservative boondoggle of nation building where we actually had the soldiers doing the nation building, and that was never going to work.
Yeah, but I still don't know why we were there. I don't know how you have a war on a frame of mind. I don't know how you... I thought we were there to go kill bin Laden. I didn't realize that there was anything... we wanted blood. We wanted retribution. And our leaders failed us at the time and have failed us all along, which is why it would be nice to have somebody who at least understands foreign policy, at least understands how government can and should work. Seems kind of sane and rational to me.
Yeah. You know what? I really wish that we could have made Afghanistan a modern democracy. I do. I love the concept of it. But you cannot make that happen overnight. And no amount of dollars was going to make that happen in Afghanistan. And we knew from the very beginning that the Taliban was always going to be playing a waiting game. They could wait us out. They lived there. Their families lived there. And we were going to have to leave at some point. And that's all they did. They just waited us out and they came back in. And we had no idea why we were going there in the first place, in a very real sense, and neither did the soldiers.
Yeah, but the thing is, we were there 20 years. You go 20 years, you should have done something. And you look at what happened yesterday. You know, it basically was just, okay, 20 years down the drain, because the army that we were supposedly building up and training and arming and doing all this stuff just said, okay, we give up, and then handed over all this stuff that we gave them, which again was predictable. I had people 10 years ago saying they're never going to fight.
Right. And also, you know, the Taliban did work in building relationships in these communities, and they had that capacity to do so. One thing that Americans don't really like to talk about, you know, now we're talking about, oh, the Taliban's going to come back and they're going to be so bad for women. Okay, but do we really know who our allies were there? Pashtun warlords across Afghanistan had significant issues with pedophilia, taking young boys as sex slaves. Those were the American allies in a lot of cases. Soldiers were told to look the other way when those types of atrocities were happening on military bases even. And the Taliban actually got their start fighting against those very warlords to keep young boys from being sexually enslaved by these warlords. And it, for me, it's just a complete lack of understanding of the cultural situation there and trading one bad for another, honestly.
Absolutely. But that is American foreign policy right there. And as I said earlier, I think what happened in Afghanistan is exactly what was supposed to happen. The American taxpayer got fleeced by corporate America. There were massive profits for our wealthy. And, well, a bunch of soldiers got killed. There was a bunch of people who got injured, but that it was worth it for the profit. To me, that's the underlying part of this, and which is why I want people in Congress who are going to be much more judicious before sending our young men and women into harm's way.
Absolutely. It's not a mistake that Dick Cheney was the one that championed this and that his daughter Liz Cheney is continuing to champion the engagement there. And it's because of their connections with Halliburton. It's the military industrial complex making billions of dollars off the taxpayer, you know, payroll. And they don't want that to end. And it's pretty obvious and it's pretty sad. And you're right. The people who paid the most for it, aside from the American taxpayer, are the people who paid with their lives and their sanity for being sent over there.
Yeah, no, we could talk about this all night, but I want to get to why you're running, because I'm always interested in why people are willing to throw themselves in the middle of the fishbowl and take the abuse and take the beatings that come with running for political office. So why are you jumping in the middle of this again?
Again, well, so I'm somebody who's used to taking a punch. I used to be a professional boxer. So, you know, taking a few hits and getting back up, that's nothing new to me. And one of the reasons I decided to run before and again is to fight the corruption. I was working behind the scenes as a consultant doing reports for nonprofits and government agencies, and I saw a lot of corruption that people just shrugged their shoulders and said, this is the way it is. And I'm here to say that it's not. I want to end the corporate take. I want to end the backroom deals. I want the people to be first in what our government does. And that's why I'm running for Congress.
Yeah, I go back to what I said about, you know, Afghanistan doing exactly what it's supposed to, which is to make more money for the very wealthy. And you're spot on. The moneyed interest of this country always come first. They always lobby themselves the best deals, the best opportunity, the lowest tax rates, all of that, while the rest of us suffer with lower educational opportunities, less healthcare opportunities. I mean, I look at what's going on in Texas right now with the governor there who now evidently is asymptomatic with COVID, and they gave him this monoclonal antibody that virtually nobody else gets because it's expensive and it's hard to get. He got it just in case.
Just in case. Well, you know, the thing that's been trending on Twitter is Regeneron Ron DeSantis, right? Because apparently his wife has some stakes in the company that makes that, and he's trying to promote that same treatment here in Florida. And it's really crazy to me that we're talking about treating an illness instead of preventing it. Because isn't prevention a big deal when we can wear masks and get people vaccinated instead of, you know, having brouhahas and pretending like it's a hoax? I mean, people are dying. We had a major restaurateur in our area die just yesterday, and a lot of people are very sad about that. And, you know, he was a denier and a big Trump supporter. And, you know, he took his life into his own hands because he was misled by people like Ron DeSantis and Abbott in Texas.
I want to say that's sad, but I got to be honest at this point, if you've put yourself into that, I know it's bad for my soul and it's bad for my karma, but, you know, that was your choice. You know, goodbye. Because we used to know, I mean, Ben Franklin told us, ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure. We used to know this stuff. This used to be common sense. What happened?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I know one of my best friends is a nurse, an ICU nurse up in Detroit. And she was telling me as early as February and March of this year that her and her colleagues were getting tired of seeing people who should have been vaccinated keep coming into the ICU. So I feel for those folks who are working in our healthcare industry. All of our hospitals are getting to capacity. Their patients is wearing very thin when people can do very simple things to protect themselves from getting sick.
Yeah, and what's concerned me throughout this pandemic is that eventually you're going to burn out those healthcare professionals and we're going to be left with nothing. I mean, I look at the states who are already overrun with their facilities, but I'm waiting for the day where people just go, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore.
And walk out, you know, right? You know, I think the healthcare industry is poised to be one of those places where there's going to be the great resignation, right? We're seeing that shift in multiple industries across the United States. And yeah, people, they've had hiring issues here in Southwest Florida for a very long time. We always are at a deficit with our healthcare workers, actually. And this is putting a huge stress on them. People are working extra hours. And we're at the point where they are asking people not to come into the ER because it's so backed up with the COVID patients.
It's crazy. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Cindy Beignet. She's running for Congress in Florida, the 19th Congressional District there. Make sure you check out her website, cindybeignet.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. You know, we've been talking about all the things that are wrong. What are we going to do to turn this around? How do we use our government to turn this thing around? I mean, for generations now, we've been bashing government's ability to do anything. We've got corporate America telling us that government's bad, everything should be privatized. You know, how do we turn all of this horrible around?
That's simple, actually. Investment. Because what you just said right now is that's the far right trope on government. Big government is bad. We defund the government. Then the government doesn't work. And it fulfills itself. The prophecy fulfills itself, right? So if we actually make investments in things that the American people need, like healthcare, like family paid leave, like environmental protections, then government will work, right? Also, if we stop putting additional means testing in there, because that actually gums it down. So when we have all these preconceived ideas about who is worthy of accepting help or needing help, that makes it harder for government to do its job. So I'm somebody who's worked in efficiency and effectiveness, and I'm looking to take that to the American government.
And I think, you know, you're right about the means testing thing, because the one thing that came out of this pandemic so far is that government intervention works. Yeah. I mean,
it does. Investment works.
Yep.
We are not in the dire straits of the economic crisis like we were last year because we did the right thing with our fiscal policy, which is make sure that people are staying in their homes, make sure people are fed, make sure that people have the capacity to have a disruption in their work and not lose their house and not be able to feed their family, that we are helping small businesses get back on their feet. That's very, very simple government expectations. And it's crazy that people who say that they value the economy like conservatives are so willing to throw it under the bus when we need it most.
Yeah, I don't know that there are any true conservatives left. What we have are corporatists and Trumpites. And the person that you're running against is Byron Daniels, is one of two African-American Republicans in Congress. Big Trump supporter. Almost buddies, I guess. How does that play in your district?
Well, it's very interesting. Our district is gerrymandered to be a red-leaning district, but I am very proud to say that in our 2020 race, we were one of only five districts in the state of Florida to move in the Democratic direction. And we did so at the cheapest rate in the state of Florida. So we had a really amazing grassroots organization that helped move votes. And it's all about winning hearts and minds, because you're right. People who think that they might be conservative by principles have the wool pulled over their eyes with these corporatists and these Trump supporters.
No, and it's something that, you know, you've got to fight in these more right-leaning rural maybe areas because look, the policies are right. The policies are popular. You start talking about the investments in infrastructure and education and healthcare. This is almost nonpartisan, or at least it should be. But we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs to, you know, we got to be in our camps. I'm on the red team. You're on the blue team. And never shall we agree on anything. And at some point, we got to break that down.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there's, I call it, you know, it's new identity politics. And, you know, being a Republican, being the Trump supporter, that's an identity. And what's interesting, if you look at what people really believe. So in our district, the $15 minimum wage amendment that was in Florida passed by 64%. Now, if each one of those people had actually voted for the candidate, me, who believes in having a $15 minimum wage, having a living wage, having a job guarantee, then I would have won the election, right? But they voted for the person who didn't believe in that. So there's a very big disconnect between what people really want and need and what they think their government officials that they're electing are going to deliver for them.
Now, let me ask you last line of questioning. What is the one issue that Cindy Beignet thinks is that's the hill you die on? I mean, everything else you could compromise on. What's that one hill that you die on?
Healthcare. For me, healthcare is very personal. My youngest daughter had a rare blood disease. And when she was going to the hospital in the ambulance for the very first time, rather than calling anybody in my family, the first phone call I made was to the insurance company. Because I wasn't sure how much an ambulance trip was going to cost, but I knew it wasn't what I had in my bank account. And I don't believe that it's right for any parent to be going bankrupt to save the life of their child. So I'm going to be fighting to make sure that we have access to affordable care that works. I am a proponent of universal health care. And I think that we need to keep making strides towards that, because that is what kids like my daughter Evie need and what everybody else in this country needs to be healthy, safe, and productive in their own right.
When you say universal health care, there's a lot of definitions being thrown around of what universal or single payer is. Single payer being the Medicare for all. Universal, in my definition, being kind of like the military's TRICARE, owned by the government, run by the government. Is that what we're talking? Where do you find yourself on that spectrum?
So I usually talk about modeling a system of care based on the Japanese model. That's where I did my university studies there, and it works really well. They have some of the best healthcare outcomes in the world. They have cost fixing. Prices are fixed in the same way that we have Medicare and Medicaid prices that are fixed, and everybody is on a sliding scale based on what they can pay to buy into that system. So it is a national healthcare plan. It is tailored to what people need, and it will make sure that people don't go bankrupt.
Yeah, I mean, it's disgraceful. And like you said, I've been fortunate. I remember my daughter broke her arm, and as I'm driving her to the hospital, I wasn't thinking of which hospital is going to give me the best deal. I was thinking, how can I get to the closest hospital, get her the care that she needs? And fortunately, I never worried about bankruptcy or any of that, because my union fights for the best health care that we're going to get. And I say all the time, our union should run the country's health care, because we get fantastic care when we need it. And I want that kind of security for everyone. So I'm glad to hear that you've got an idea and you want to move us in a positive direction. I want people to check out the website, CindyBeignet.com. What can we do to help?
Send money. That's what grassroots candidates need. I would love for you. You can find me on @blue, CindyBanyai. If you'd like to volunteer, share, retweet my stuff, share my links on Facebook and Twitter. All of that stuff helps a grassroots candidate. $5, $10, every little bit matters. And I love to have support. I love to hear from folks. So go ahead and reach out. I'm here.
Good stuff. Cindy, I appreciate the time. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again as this continues.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Rick.
Great having you back. CindyBeignet.com, the website. Maybe help out where you can. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.